Into this dark night, souls begin to enter when God draws them forth from the state of beginners, which is the state of those that meditate on the spiritual road, and begins to set them in the state of progressives, which is that of those who are already contemplatives, to the end that after passing through it, they may arrive at the state of the perfect, which is that of the divine union of the soul with God. So begins the classic 16th century work of Christian mysticism called The Dark Night of the Soul, written by someone we identify as St. John of the Cross. There are at least three reasons why today is an opportunity to sort of push the pause button on our disoriented lives and noisy surroundings, noisy with everything from the endless hum of appliances and traffic and leaf blowers to the stupefying barrage of panic-inducing, blood pressure-raising bulletins coming constantly from every medium. And, of course, the pleasantries of a civil society engaged in the lead-up to a proper and dignified election. One reason to step back, take a breath, and reset ourselves with some basic questions is that in our congregation's annual cycle, today happens to be the day that we dedicate our intentions for our own stewardship in the year to come, financial stewardship and other kinds of stewardship. If you are joining us as a visitor today, first of all, we are delighted to have you and welcome you here. Please feel at ease. If you would like to make a pledge or a contribution, we're not going to prohibit you from doing that, but that's not really what we're about today, and I hope you haven't just tuned out when I said it was Stewardship Sunday. A second reason for a deep breath and a kind of a moment to reflect is that in our branch of the Christian family tree, today is identified as Reformation Sunday. It's a nice opportunity each year to touch base with and maybe reassess why we believe and do what we do in our tradition. I'm not going to do too much with Reformation Sunday as a theme today. I'm not sure that this specific moment calls out for sharp delineations as to what makes us different from people of other traditions. Again, if you're visiting with us today, you are visiting a church that is part of the Reformed tradition of followers of Jesus and joyfully welcomes you as we celebrate alongside every other tradition that means to be faithful to God and to creation, which includes every human being. And a third reason, that was a very Reformed thing to say, by the way, and a third reason is that this day of the week, Sunday, is traditionally called the Lord's Day. But really every day is the Lord's Day, a day into which you and I have been called to live and embody what it means to be faithful to who we are and to who God is. This is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. Let's not let this day or any day pass by without pausing to recognize the awesome improbability, really, of any of us any of this having been here in the first place, and recommit ourselves accordingly. I was just reminded the other day of Anne Lamott saying, try walking around with a child who's going, wow, wow, look at that dirty dog, look at that burned out house, look at that red sky. And the child points, and you look, and you see. And you start going, wow, look at that huge, crazy hedge. Look at that teeny little baby. Look at that scary, dark cloud. And Lamott says, I think this is how we are supposed to be in the world, present and in awe. Today, like every day, is an opportunity to remember that we, people of the way, people of the manger, and the cross, and the empty tomb, are about something that is infinite, inconceivably vast, and yet immediate, intimately personal, and consequentially interpersonal. Today, like every day, is an opportunity to think again about the fundamental truth of who we are, who you are, and what God is, even now, inviting us to be and to do. The name of the field of theology literally means we are asking and offering tentative answers to the question of who and what God is. The Bible seems a lot less interested in that question than in what theology tangibly means to all of us on a daily basis, on an hourly, on a moment-by-moment basis. A question that God seems to find infinitely more interesting, which is, who and what are you? Along with the community that composed, recited, worshiped, and lived by all the Psalms, including Psalm 90, we have a theology that generally can be described with certain images and concepts. But at a deeper level, what we believe about God is more organically expressed by the fact that the Psalms are written and spoken not solely as third-person treatises. God is this, God said that, you know, and does this. But just as much in second person, using the word you, saying something to someone else, and asking questions that are as much practical as they are, quote-unquote, theological. Second person is the way we write a love letter. It's the way we write a message in a bottle. It's the way we write in our private diary, in your daily journal, written, interestingly, to an indeterminate but somehow quite personal audience. Or the angry note that you write in order to articulate your frustration and get it down on paper, but then wisely put through the shredder. Or a letter of request to a company with whom you do business. Or like the unrequited and lovelorn protagonist of that old Moody Blues song, Nights in White Satin, letters I've written, never meaning to send. Or fan mail. Or a letter of appreciation and esteem, written after decades to a long-retired mentor. You have been our dwelling place in all generations, before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth and the world. From everlasting to everlasting, you are God. You turn us back to dust and say, turn back, you mortals. For 1,000 years in your sight are like yesterday when it is past, or like a watch in the night. The eternal God has given us the time that we have here together. In that time, we are about something infinite and inconceivably vast, yet immediate, intimate, personal and interpersonal. What do you want that time to be? Or what will you want that time to have been? We close many of our worship services by reciting a passage from Mark's Gospel as our charge. Earlier in this service today, we heard Matthew's version of that passage, wherein the question is presented not as the benevolent inquiry of an earnest seeker, but as a mischievous test from a challenger. Some Pharisees had heard that Jesus had recently outwitted another group known for their sophistication, which was the Sadducees. So one of the Pharisees asked Jesus what they probably thought was going to be a kind of a trick question designed to sort of lure him into an answer that, I don't know, I guess would expose him for, you know, whatever nefarious thing they thought he was trying to be. As always, Jesus takes a conflictive, toxic situation and brings light and hope. Teacher, which commandment in the law is the greatest? You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the greatest and first commandment, and a second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. In other words, all of the other sacred scripture subservient to love God and love your neighbor. What are the fundamental truths of what you are called to be and to do in the time that God has given us here? Into this dark night, souls begin to enter when God draws them forth from their meditations on the spiritual road, to the end that after passing through the state of contemplation, they may arrive at the state of the perfect, the divine union of the soul with God.